From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, ancient technology. Laird Scranton joins me. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Well, that satellite put into orbit by North Korea over the weekend does not appear to be transmitting, but it is worrying that the rocket that took it there delivered twice the payload. What could be in it? Are people a little concerned? Top U.S. intelligence officials said that ISIS was likely to attempt direct attacks now on the U.S. this year, and that the group was infiltrating refugees escaping from Iraq and Syria to move across the border. No kidding. For the first time since combat operations were declared over the weekend of the end of 2014 as well, a battalion of 500 U.S. Army infantrymen, they're being ready to be sent to southern Afghanistan's volatile province there, where the Taliban have made a comeback. So we're sending troops back in to Afghanistan, not taking them out. This is a sign of military escalation in a country that is so screwed up, I can't tell you. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former business executive Carly Fiorina have called it quits from their campaigns for the Republican nomination for president. They just didn't get enough votes in the caucus and in the primaries. Howard Bloom, an expert on the world, I want to tap into you, Howard, because I got to tell you, this is a very strange, strange election year, isn't it?
It is really weird, and it's about time that we had one like this, because this is the I meant what I said, and I said what I meant revolution. This is the authenticity revolution. We've needed this for at least 30 years. We have been plagued with candidates who have triangulated their positions by trying to appeal to five different interest groups simultaneously and haven't said an honest word to us. There have been four magic ingredients in what happened last night. Trump outdid his nearest competitor, John Kasich, 3-1. Bernie Sanders outdid Hillary Clinton almost 2-1. And there are four magic ingredients behind these two enormous landslides, the Trump landslide and the Sanders landslide. Number one is authenticity. When you make decisions only with your brain, as incredible a computational machine is, as your verbal intelligence, your rational intelligence, it's terrific, but it makes huge mistakes. When you make decisions with only another computational machine, your gut, your instincts, your emotions, you also get some things right, but you make some big mistakes. When you have the two of them working together, your reason and your gut, your emotion and your verbal faculties, you make a lot fewer mistakes. And what do we have with Bernie Sanders? And what do we have with Donald Trump? Two people who are equally convinced in their rational centers of their brain and in their gut, in their emotional system, that what they are saying is true. So we have two people who, for the first time in roughly 30 years, are delivering messages that we believe to be honest. There's another factor. Factor number one is authenticity. Factor number two is confidence and conviction. Animals of all kinds win showdowns when they show confidence and conviction. And when you have authenticity, when you believe what you're saying is true, you can emanate confidence and conviction. Sure. And both Sanders and Trump do that. And there's a third factor, and this is very weird and very important, the ability to identify bad guys. Politics is about giving permission to hate. Bernie Sanders says the bad guys are billionaires and Wall Street. Donald Trump says the bad guys are illegal immigrants, corporations that are abandoning us via inversions, Iran and ISIS. And we need that emotional clarity, unfortunately. But we need to be very careful about it. We need to make sure that the bad guys that we identify are really the bad guys. And the last factor is simplicity. Bernie can sum up each of his policy positions in one or two sentences. So can Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, they cannot do this. So you need simplicity, something that appeals, not just appeals to the gut, but appears to the gut and to the rational mind to be honest and transparent. You get those things, and you get the confidence they give. You get a simple narrative that says who the bad guys are, and you've got the winning ingredients of politics.
It's going to be interesting. We'll talk to you later, Howard. Thank you so much. In a moment, I'm bringing out John Hogue. We're going to be talking about prophecy and how he sees the election to date. He's had his words for us, and he's been spot on lately. Twitter has disappointed investors again, saying that it saw no growth in average monthly active users in the fourth quarter. Well, the investors weren't happy with that. Federal Reserve Chairperson Janet Yellen has cautioned that the global weakness and falling financial markets could depress the U.S. economy's growth and slow the pace of the Fed interest rate hikes. That's not a good thing. Andre Aguilachan, of course, author of Thieves in the Temple, America Under the Federal Reserve System. Andre, do they know what they're talking about?
I'm sorry, George, I didn't catch all of it. That was during the changeover. Go ahead.
Do they know what they're talking about up there at the Fed?
Well, I can tell you that a lot of the questions that she got were interesting questions, and they questioned her in a variety of areas about Federal Reserve policy. Much of it had to do with whether or not the Fed is going to raise interest rates. We had people to ask her, you know, is the Fed going to really begin to focus on its mandate of full employment? Because we do have very high unemployment among African Americans. It's something mm-hmm. like 50% for African American men between ages 18 to 35. But the economy did add something like 2.7 million jobs so far this year, and it's down to 4.9%. However, she did note that the economy is facing a lot of headwinds coming from overseas due to the strong dollar. Falling oil prices are going to be a huge problem for the Federal Reserve in trying to calibrate what it's trying to do. As a matter of fact, you know, we've seen a lot of people lose their jobs working in the oil sector. Halliburton, ConocoPhillips, Chevron, and ExxonMobil have already slashed something like 130,000 jobs last year, and they're expecting that to go even higher. So the Fed is grappling with a lot of fundamentals that are going to be troublesome with trying to raise interest rates going forward. I'm not looking for it next month.
All right, Andre, thank you so much. So here's some news you can use. There are now 260,000 robots working in U.S. factories. Put that away, and who knows, you might use it one day. One of the U.S.'s most senior public health officials has revealed the strongest evidence to date of the effects of babies in the Zika virus. Dr. Tom Frieden, head of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, says that the data from the cases of just a couple infants in Brazil who died soon after birth indicated the virus is passing now from the mother to the child. However, he said the suspected link was still not definite. A baby miraculously woke up in a Chinese morgue after spending 15 hours at just over 10 degrees Fahrenheit. Morgue workers were preparing to cremate the boy when the boy began to moan. The boy had spent weeks in intensive care after being prematurely born in January. It's an amazing story there. The body of a 22-year-old California woman was discovered in the parking lot in California of a Walmart store last week. Investigators said that it appears her body went unnoticed for 3 months. How can that be? And horses. Well, we've always known that horses can be very smart animals, but they can recognize human emotion, according to a new study. That's a little bit of more news you can use. And an 8th Harry Potter book is to be released this summer, containing the script for a new stage play telling the wizard story. In a moment, another wizard joins us, John Hogue, as we talk about predictions for 2015 through 2016, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Action-packed couple hours. John Hogue with us. Of course, he writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He has been published in at least 18 languages, has appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows on three continents. And, of course, we turned to John many times for his predictions, and we're going to do that again tonight. We'll take calls next hour with him as well. What a year this is unfolding to be, John.
Yes, the year of the fire monkey in Chinese astrology is going ape already.
Sure is. It sure is. Okay, so I'd be remiss not to talk with you about some of these presidential races, what's going on with the primaries, pulling out some of your predictions. What's going on, John?
Well, it's looking like a lot of what I said in the book that I wrote on Donald Trump's astrological chances, Trump for President, is the name of it, Astrological Predictions. We were talking about that in January, early January, the 13th of January, I guess it was. No, it was the end of December, that's right. You know, I said he'd win the New Hampshire primary. He was very favored to win it, and he did. It also shows that he is going to be very favorable in South Carolina and Nevada. And it looks like he's the potential, so far so good on the potentials of him kind of going over the top and doing, actually what he did in Iowa was one of those things I warned about, that he might kind of exceed himself in going over the top and do something outrageous like not show up.
Not show up, yep.
I think that lost him Iowa.
I think so too.
And but he learns from his mistakes, and I think he changed his tone. Something I was telling you, how he had the skill that Mitt Romney didn't have 4 years ago, being a Gemini with Leo rising, great performance skills, and a Sagittarian moon. He is a brilliant promoter of himself and an adapter, being a mutable sign. It makes him not stubborn and fixed, but flexible, even though he's got a very fixed outer expression, which is his ascendant in Leo. It's anchored to a Mars, so that's his energy source. You know, he's got a dynamo of energy for a man in his 70th year that's much more vital than a lot of the younger men and women that are involved in this campaign. But it's locked into a 12th house mode, so it's it makes him a very good poker player, or in a more performing arts style. He knows how to put on a certain face at a certain time, and it was very interesting to see how he could just intuitively know that with New Hampshireites he had to change his tone. And now he's right back to being a more invective, effective attacker in South Carolina, where they love it rough down there. So he knows how to play the states. He seems to have an almost unconscious, intuitive understanding of that. And it is interesting to see that Ted Cruz, I'm feeling more and more now that South Carolina is going to give us a view of what's going to happen in the South. And it's really going to be a battle of Cruz on Cruz control, trying to get the evangelicals on his side. It's just his only possibility for going mm-hmm. after Trump. The problem is that Donald Trump also has, and I would say even more, has emotionally connected with the evangelical Christians in the South. And who, as one evangelical once said, you know, I don't want to elect a preacher to go to Washington. I want to elect a Christian or somebody who has my values, who is a leader. And there again, the tone of the times. I look at Cruz's chart, and I'm kind of think, wow, you know, there's a lot of issues with subterfuge and trickiness and things in his chart that probably makes him a very good politician. But you know, the fact that it's really a telling thing that all the senators in the Republican caucus, not a single one of them endorsed his candidacy. That's really telling of somebody who doesn't work well with people. Somebody who says, if you're not what I consider a conservative, then you're not a conservative, is almost what he said. And I think that kind of stiffness is going to, in the end, he could make this linger beyond my prediction. You know, I was telling you that I felt like a lot of this might be decided between now and April Fool's mm-hmm. Day, 1st of April.
And you might be right there. There's a part of me here, though, John, as but lousy...
I got to say, George, that I'm not so sure that's going to happen now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, there was another scenario that I talked about in the Trump book, too. You know, my job is... I know some people don't like this, and they're critical about
this when I do it, but, you know, my experience of 30 years of the prophecy world is that prophecy is a reflection of the dynamism of the present. It is not a dead, already written script that only the divines know, and then it's up to people like me and the rest of us to kind of find out what
right.
the script had already written for us. That is a form of spiritual politics that has been around for thousands of years that, in my experience of the future, does not measure up to the truth of it. So, of course, I'll say a thing like Hillary Clinton is the most certain possibility of being the president of the United States. But I will also tell in every most certain view that I sense, a certain view that's based on enough people unconsciously, habitually following down that road makes it so. But just being on your show talking to millions of people, I might be already changing that future for a lot of people because
sure.
I'm making them change their choices. So with that in mind, I always look for the weak link in any strong vision. And so my job is to tell you what looks certain, 95% certain, but I'll tell you what the 5% is as well. And the 5% for Hillary Clinton is if Donald Trump runs against her in the presidential elections. I feel very strongly that if Trump is running as a Republican nominee, that she has a chance of losing. But I don't see anyone else in the Republican group stable that can even come close to that.
Even Jeb Bush at this point?
Here's the interesting thing. You know, in the last time we talked, I pretty much said Jeb was over.
Right. Even when you thought it was going to be Hillary against Jeb.
Yeah, and that was, you know, this is one of those situations where you kind of go against yourself and you kind of wonder, you know, I made a prediction years ago in 2013 that it was going to be Jeb versus Clinton.
And that was way before we thought about Trump even coming in.
Yeah, except that I was also saying at that time, not mentioning any names because I didn't see one, but I said if ever there was a chance for somebody to come out of nowhere.
Yep. You did.
A third party rebellion, even if it's a changeling or a cuckoo bird inside the, you know, it's like, you know, the cuckoo bird actually lays its egg in the nest of another bird. And then the other bird imprints on it and the mama bird raises it. And in a way, it's the only way that a third party rebellion, short of Michael Bloomberg with $35 billion at his disposal, the only other way anybody else with less money and input can do it is they've got to pretend they're the robin, the cuckoo bird in the robin nest.
Yep.
Bernie Sanders is a socialist, and he's now a Democrat. Donald Trump is the party of Trump. He doesn't belong. The only way he's very, very similar in my view of him, he's a return of Ronald Reagan, who was also not considered a true conservative. But he is winning the hearts and minds of people. His cathartic message is capturing people, just like Bernie Sanders is doing the same on the left side.
They're capturing frustration, John.
Yes, they are. But here's the thing that could get really strange, because nothing's written in stone. Just things can be almost written in stone, because it takes a whole lot of people being very mechanical in their actions and thoughts to make a thing happen. And most of the time, those can be predicted before they happen. But it's really a challenge in a year like this, because what happens in a year like this, it's kind of a disturbance in the force, if you will, where there's a potential for the human race, these windows open up where the human race can jump out of its habits. And that makes it very hard to predict what comes next, even for forecasters. I mean, look at all these pundits in a more mundane sense who are just being wrong all the time because you have to kind of rethink, you have to look at the whole thing in a new way and not depend on old knowledge helping you and predictability, because predictability is kind of going out the window this year. So if ever there was a year where I'm going to be wrong after doing this in 68, being 12-0, this would be the year.
I wouldn't count you out yet.
No, I wouldn't either. It's just the beginning of the show, and so far I'm been pretty spot on what I saw in the beginning. But I mean, I said that Bernie Sanders, I said on your show that Bernie Sanders would start win big in the beginning. And he did. I mean, he virtually won Iowa. I think that was a tie.
Hold on for a second, John. We're going to come right back and talk more about this incredible moment we're in right now. We'll take your phone calls next hour with the King of Prophecy, John Hoag. Right now, we're going to be talking with him about more of these primaries while things are just in a state of flux, aren't they? And welcome back to Coast, John Hoag with us. Something tells me, John, that there's still going to be something major happening in terms of an upset. What we think might happen may not. I don't know. It's just a weird feeling I have. How about you?
Oh, this is the very nature of this year. What I call is a foreboding prophetic wild card moment. And it could change the whole course of the election more than once. I mean, this issue with ISIS, the fact that Saudi Arabia and the Arab sheikdoms of the Gulf states may be putting troops on the ground.
And we're going back into Afghanistan again.
You know, the whole issue with ISIS, the fact that ISIS is, what ISIS is actually doing is, to give you an example, if there's an attack, a terrorist-style attack in the United States, and I think it's likely in this year, especially between now and March, or between August and September, especially September, because even the descendants of Al-Qaeda as terrorist groups like to play with the numbers 11, 9, and 7
right.
In their attacks. It's remarkable how many times the numbers come up. Now, imagine if that happened. I could imagine Trump saying, well, did I not tell you that Iraq was a mistake to get into back years and years ago? Did I not tell everyone that what George W. Bush is doing, Jeb Bush, was a disaster? And can you, even today, on television at CBS, he was saying, look, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. But can you imagine if he was in power that there would ever have been an ISIS? Because he was the guy fighting the bulwark against that kind of jihadist extremism.
That's right.
The same with Libya and Gaddafi being overthrown by NATO and the country being rendered into a failed state. It is now spreading ISIS. The thing is that Bush could, Trump could basically say, do you understand now why I want to keep the Muslims out until we find out how to deal with this? He said it was temporary. I mean, it is an extreme statement he made, but this is times of extremes. And the thing is that there's an essence to what he says that constantly is right.
And ISIS is admitting that they want to infiltrate with refugees.
Yes, and I mean, even Angela Merkel has had to backtrack with bringing all these people. And I can tell you from my contacts, German friends, that women in German cities now don't walk alone. That there is a real problem, and it isn't... to just blow people off as being racist or nativist is really not understanding and empowering oneself to really be a part of the solution. If you just brush it off as just nativism or racism, you're not listening to the real concerns, and the facts are there. Now, I mean, would we have allowed German civilians to visit the United States from Nazi Germany during the war? I mean, no.
And look what we did to the Japanese, John.
I know, and that which was wrong. But and we didn't do it to the Germans, who are a lot more Germans, and actually there were German terrorists that came in and sabotaged factories, sank a ship in the an ocean liner in New York Harbor. During the war, but they fit into everybody else's whiteness, so that didn't happen. Now, this is what is intriguing about Trump. He is the boy in the Emperor's New Clothes story. He has a certain innocent, incisive way of just telling people some truths that they just don't want to hear. And that, whether it is right or wrong, is refreshing to a whole lot of people in this country who are really fed up with both parties. And this is, he's coming into this thing, coming into his best chance to be president, just in a year when establishment candidates, no matter how virtuous they are just not going to make it. Like Jeb Bush is probably, by winning fourth place in New Hampshire, has brought some blood back into his anemic candidacy.
And he's hoping for a brokered convention.
Well, actually, it's set up for that. And my book on Trump for President, Astrological Predictions, I talked at length about how the Republican Party has set itself up for a brokered, for an open convention, where after the first ballot, all the delegates have to dutifully vote as they were picked. But the second ballot, they can pick anybody they like.
They're on their own. That's right. Yeah.
And it could be, and that's why I can't rule out the Jeb Bush Hillary Clinton race.
I'm not either. And when, by the way, I want to let everybody know, John, that when you make prophecy or we make opinion, it doesn't necessarily mean that's what you want. That's what you think, and that's the important thing.
You know, to be accurate 12 times in a row means that I don't actually pick people. More often, I pick people that I don't agree with personally. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, there will be people who are guided by their emotional body rather than their intellect to feel an emotional reaction to what I'm saying, and then kind of troll all over me for it. I always have to laugh when I get, when I know I'm doing it right, when the first email comes and it's somebody from the right saying, oh, you're such a bleeding liberal, followed by somebody from the left saying, oh, you're such a Republican.
You can't win.
I just laugh. I say, I'm doing my job. I'm getting all the extremes upset.
You sure are. You sure are. So with a brokered convention, and that possibility does loom over the Republican end, I would think then that the established politicos would push for Jeb Bush.
Yes, as kind of a compensation, kind of a, you know, it would be like what happened, the closest thing I can think about is what happened in the 72 Democratic Convention, where they kind of picked the beauty queen that everybody could tolerate, and it was really, it just went to a landslide for Nixon in 72, one of the greatest landslides in history. And that is what the Republic, if it goes to brokered convention, the Republicans are going to give whoever the Democrat is. Well, no, sorry, let me clarify. If it's Hillary Clinton, it'll be a landslide if it's a brokered convention, especially if they don't pick Trump.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's brought into this is the potential of, now I said that Bernie Sanders would start big, and he did, but I said he can't close. So I know a lot of people are starting, especially in the press, are starting to really bombard the Hillary Clinton campaign with the fact that she lost against somebody who really was virtually a favored son of New Hampshire.
Well, yeah, but he's from that neck of the woods. You know, he's from Connecticut. So he's...
And I would have everybody just pause and reflect on this, that now we're entering Clinton country. We're entering the South from South Carolina on.
That's right.
Super Tuesday.
Very.
We are entering a racially diverse group of people where, yes, it's true that Bernie Sanders has even been arrested and marched in civil rights marches. But as a lot of my black friends will tell you, it says a lot of people marched with us, but that doesn't mean they were with us for the last 30 years. And it is true that the Clintons, love them or hate them, have been dedicated to working for the betterment of African Americans in this country, and that is not forgotten. The other thing, too, is that I know what's going to happen in this thing from a prophetic point of view. Hillary Clinton's camp is going to start listing the record of Bernie Sanders as what he has voted against in civil rights, and he's voted against a lot of things. And they're going to put out the question, is he really a revolutionary, or is he just a rhetorical revolutionary? I mean, I'll give you an example, something that the reporter, Chris Hedges, who used to work for the New York Times and now has gone independent, had said recently. He listed all these things. He said that basically there was a whole lot of things that are very, very he voted for a whole lot of things that was pro-Clinton corporate. You know, and it's I don't have the list right here. It's the wrong quote, but it's like if he's a revolutionary, how could he campaign for Bill Clinton in 1992 and then in 1996? And how can he be supporting a man who supports NAFTA and expand prisons and put a tax on welfare? I mean, this is who he endorsed. This is the guy who did not endorse Ralph Nader in his campaign in 96 and 2000. This is really something. He's passed a lot of military appropriation bills. He voted against some of the civil rights bills that the Clintons voted for. He has funded the NSA. He's voted bills for funding the CIA. He's voted for every. There's not a pro-Israel resolution coughed up by the Israeli lobby, an AIPAC that he hasn't supported. Just whatever they say he supports. I mean, AIPAC is very right wing. I mean, I was really shocked when I started looking at his record and realizing. And then the ultimate problem that he has for winning is that he has already said he would surrender up his campaign to the winner of the Democratic Party, which is to say, if it isn't him, it's Hillary Clinton. So how do you start a revolution when you surrender your everything already at the get-go before the fight to the person you're basically calling the corporate choice?
And the mood of the people seems to change at any given moment. Isn't that going to be an important factor here?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a very irrational time, and the people that will succeed in this are the people that know how to harness the irrational mass mind. It's a very hysterical time, and this will be a very hysterical campaign season, where people will decide on their emotions. For instance, what I'm saying will not change a lot of the younger demographics from Bernie Sanders, because they've bought him. And once that happens, it doesn't matter anymore what the person says. And the same thing goes for the people who have bought into Trump. They've made an emotional investment.
Yeah.
That means anything that then it becomes almost like a belief system. And what often happens in the people who are stuck in the belief system syndrome is that once they've become part of the faith, anything that puts skeptical inquiry or doubt into what the faith is teaching is considered a threat from Satan himself. And to actually question your faith means that you will be abandoned by the very community that has embraced you. So you don't want to do that. So it tends to blind people to reason. And that is why Cruz will not be able to win enough of the evangelicals over to his side, because he does not have that emotional connection that Trump can garnish and gather, just like Reagan did in 1980. And if the situation in the world worsens, we are heading towards the recession that I've been predicting for years, for 2016.
What a year this is going to be, John.
And then, so you've got a man who says, look, I make things happen. I fix things. I build buildings. It's amazing that Trump's slogan of I'm a smart guy who can get things done is all he really needs to say to win the presidency, if he says it enough and enough, and if the situation in the times continue to worsen. Like, I was even saying in the book that people who were upset with some of his outrageous statements about Muslims and about women and all of that that they've heard, and then that I'm saying, you know, in November, early November, when you're all looking at whether you're going to have a job, whether ISIS is going to attack you again, all
whether
these
whether you're
things,
being taxed
these,
too much,
these wild cards that are going to change the world overnight. You wake up with an ISIS attack. You wake up with a stock market crash. Suddenly, people kind of forget that they had a problem with what Trump said here or there, and they're looking at these guys that are saying, "Come on, believe in us. We're the," and then they're saying, "Hey, you're the guys that got us here." And so people will take a risk, especially in a monkey fire monkey year like this. They'll take a risk with the unknown, like they would not do before. So it's very likely, as long a shot as it can be, there's a real chance that Trump could become president. Or
I think you're right. Or
if he's not picked by the Republican Party, or if he is picked, or if Cruz somehow wins, and Hillary is taken out by Sanders, then there's another random element that can come into this, named Michael Bloomberg.
Would he run as a third party candidate?
In 2008, I wrote about this possibility because he was thinking about it last time in 2008. And when I read this thing, I posted it at HogueProphecy.com. All I had to do was change the years from 2008 to 2016. And it sounds like this prediction, you know, it was off by 8 years in dating, but it's really about this year. If it gets to that, I said back then that he is the only man in American history who has a chance of actually winning as a straight-up third-party candidate, if he ever went in. So we shall have to see. It may also very well be that is the reason why Trump wins, because if he runs, he will probably divide the moderates in such a way that the nominee, especially if it's Trump, will probably win.
Is there any of these candidates, John, in your opinion, who is really acting presidential? I mean, Trump is, you know, we hear what he's doing to Megyn Kelly. He's called a editor of a newspaper psycho. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, it's a different world. And the problem is people are tired of all those people who have, quote unquote, acted as president and got us into this.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so, you know, if it were any other time, George, it would just not even have gotten this far.
No, this is the strangest time ever.
But there is a current in the world that where people, and it's not just in America. Even ISIS is a form in the Islamic world of people having catharsis about the way things are. A lot of people support ISIS in the Middle East because of the way the West, since World War I, has been manipulating the Arab world, drawing its borders, making sure that the smallest populations have the most resources, so the divide and conquer, the potential of an Arab, the Ba'athist Party was trying to unite all Arab people in a state, and that was a threat to the white supremacists who wanted to control all the oil. So in the Middle East, they understand, they get why something like ISIS rises. We don't understand what's going on there. We go into there and blinded by our, it's odd. It's the oddest thing I've ever seen. We are a nation that is always isolationist. Although sometimes we take our isolationism into other countries and project it upon those countries we control.
John, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you. It's time to become interactive right here on Coast to Coast AM.